Divine Mother Sarada and Ramakrishna, teacher of the world. In these two we take refuge, and before them we bow our heads again and again. This evening we have the privilege of hearing from two devotees and admirers of our holy family. The first one is Dr. Nagambo Shah, formerly teacher of mathematics, professor of mathematics at Spelman College, better known to us as Swarna, and in the real sense, the mother of Vedanta mathematics. You all know that, and that is one reason that we put her on the program first. And then, after she's finished, we'll introduce the second speaker. Please go ahead, sir.
Ya Devi Sarva Bhuteshu Matri Rupena Samstita Namastasye 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 Namo Namaha. Sri Gurubhyo Namaha. Arihi Om. Yes, you can see it is quite an ordeal for me to start to talk. I got home from school about 4 o'clock today, and tears. And I have cried constantly, and then I said, oh well, I had to take shower anyway, so you know, I'll be alright. So I took care of that, and you know, I said, well, you know, Swamiji has given me this ordeal about talking about Holy Mother in front of this audience. I guess he sure knows that I'm here to show how ignorant I am, for I don't come to any classes, and I don't read much either. But I couldn't tell no, and Swamiji asked, because I love him so dearly, and I said, he knows what he's asking for. So I said, yes, Swamiji. And then I frantically looked around in my shrine room to look for books. Didn't find any books on Holy Mother, because all those books get borrowed by some of my students or friends. So, you know, I couldn't find any books. So I asked Revati. So she said, well, I have Nikhilananda's book. But I said, no, I'm looking for the Gospel of Holy Mother, you know. So she said, no. So I said, okay, let me ask Swamiji. Swamiji said, oh, I can't find that book either. Then finally he found the culprit who had that book. Shambhai had that book. And he brought the book. He said, oh, he was reading. But I said, well, I'll give it back to you over the weekend. So he said, how would you do that? You know, so then I remembered the person who had borrowed my book. She was in California, so I called her. Of several other books, she had this book too, and finally my book arrived a couple of days ago, so I returned the book. And you know, in those 2 days, how much I would have read. And it wouldn't make any difference what I read anyway. Then I told myself that, well, it's not my name because it reads Dr. Nagambal Shah, so I said, well, all I need to do is change the costume. So I said, I go as Swarna. Everybody knows me as Swarna. So since it reads Dr. Nagyam Balsha, I change the costume and it reads Spelman College. And she teaches mathematics, so she doesn't know anything anyway. So she doesn't come to teach math here. So I said, I'm all right. Then I saw Dr. Padia was with me, so I said, I'll go after him. So he would have said everything, so I don't have to worry. So I pacified myself. But finally, I had to sit around with the book. And as I started sitting with the book, I started making notes. Usually when I write hand notes these days, I leave it somewhere else. I can't read it anyway. So I said, it don't make any difference. So I said, I might as well go and sit there and make a fool of myself. But mother doesn't let you do that, for she's always with you. So, speaking of mother, that's a very favorite word for all of us, the word mother, the first word that we utter. And when you take a deep sigh, always it is, oh mother. Anytime you are in distress, that is the word that you remember. And Holy Mother, being the mother of all, she takes a special place, and she has a very special place in my life. I knew about Sarada Ma, or Sarada, the wife of Sri Ramakrishna, when I was studying back home, but just from the historical point of view, and that was about it. I was introduced to Vedanta in the 1970s when I was living in Atlanta, when we had moved to Grand Park through my ex-husband, my children's father, who was a devotee of Ramakrishna. He was from Rajkot, and Rajkot, there is a Ramakrishna center, and that is how I was introduced to Ramakrishna. In 1975, I happened to have a summer job in Colorado, working at NCAR, and I was working there for 3 months. I was 6 months pregnant. And I was told that, well, this is going to be the last time you're going to work out of town with the children, so go ahead and take it. So I took the summer job in Colorado. And at that time, a paid trip was provided for my husband. So he came to join us, and my mother-in-law was also visiting with us. So at that time, we took a trip during July 4th weekend to California, and included in there was Colorado, Portland area, and we happened to know the name, not me, Deepak, happened to know the name of Swami Ashishananda in Portland, and who was the disciple of Holy Mother, and we thought we will have the fortune of visiting that center. And with my big stomach, we had arrived there during the evening, and we wandered round and round and round in Portland. But we did not know the name of Swami Ashishananda. We were looking for Vedanta. But the center was under the name of Swami, and we could not find the center. That was the beginning of Vedanta, as far as I was concerned, as we wandered around in Portland. Came back to Atlanta, and time passed, and it was around early 76, 77. I met a friend of mine's mother. We always referred to her as Meena's mother, and that mother I had met in 1972 when I first moved to Atlanta, and I was very much taken up by her because she was a South Indian mother, and reminded very much of my mother. So I happened to get acquainted with that mother again at that time. And we were talking about that when mother said that, you know, oh, I go to the Vedanta Center in Chicago and you should invite Swami Bhashyananda and he would come for sure. So that's where it all got started. Then Swami Bhashyananda was invited and Swamiji came to Atlanta in 1976. He came with two American disciples, young American disciples, Bhaskar and Vivek, I remember very well, and came in a trailer which was parked in our driveway. And Swamiji spent most of the time there, and you know, I wasn't used to Swamis in those days. I grew up in a Brahmin family, grew up with chanting and all those kind of things, knew very little of what did it mean. But yet, you know, there was a lot of chanting at home. I learned some of those by heart. Some of them are forbidden for women, as it said, but I still heard and I learned. And often used to ask questions to my father. What did it mean? And nobody knew the answer. And I used to get mad. But at that time, there wasn't, I did not have enough books or anything to look up to. But it was, I was privileged to have those privileges, to be able to have chantings at home. But I was brought up in a family where temple was next door and the morning started with a prayer. And I used to get up very early in the morning. Come from a family of 8 children. I'm the 7th and the baby girl. The first one going to college. Come from a very, very small village. Went through school, through my undergraduate school, studying under a hurricane lamp. Did not have electricity. And the hurricane lamp often was homemade because there was one lamp and, you know, the glass breaks all the time, so it didn't make any difference. So we used to have ink bottles. The ink was filled up in pen. Those ink bottles are very sturdy and round-shaped, so my sister used to make a lamp out of that. So she will make a hole in there and a thick wick was inserted. And, you know, so didn't have to worry about cleaning everything. So that was available. Used to love school. I didn't enjoy any sports, what the girls used to do. I used to climb trees with boys. Didn't enjoy making hair or playing dolls and all those kind of things. After my uncle, my father's brother, was my idol. He woke up very early in the morning at 4 o'clock and would be chanting and would leave very early in the morning to take shower, to go take a bath and come back, do the sun worship and all that. And, you know, I used to watch all that, and I remember when he had breakfast, he wouldn't talk, but he would share a piece of everything to whoever was all around. And he was one of my idols, and I used to get to sleep under the mosquito net, used to get to partake of the warm milk that he used to be offered and all. And during my final year in high school, he passed. And that was very, very hard for me. That was the only one death in the family I have ever witnessed. At that time, studying for the exam, I don't know what, he had some disease which was wounds all over on his body. Don't know what it was. I didn't know the names, but he has below his leg. Such a person who was such a clean person, who lived such a life, pious life. But his last days was, we had a hard time to go near him, but yet we used to take turns to fan him, but we used to carry jasmine flowers so that the smell would not bother us. But the family really took care of him. I don't know what it was. And yet, I saw him that, again, we didn't think of it that way. When he prayed at night, he did not pray to reach, Mother, take me away. But he always prayed that, get him cured so that he will be better. But he was very proud of my being in school. And after he died, it was very, very hard for me. I pondered on the religious rites and things that went on. I had a privilege to go to college, although there was a lot of opposition, but I did have support from some cousin, brother in the family to go to college. And my mother was the person behind to push through that. I did follow my dream. For she saw that I did want to go to school. And this woman, she had only been through fifth grade, but she managed the complete family. Father was away, he worked in the railway, so mother was totally in charge of the family and commanded the whole family matters. Was very kind-hearted. Was married at the age of 10. And I saw how deep that person was. And I spent most of my days around her other than school days. I wasn't interested in social life, so I didn't go for any parties or family functions or anything like that. But my mother was an idol. I saw how sometimes when people come, when there was a flood in Assam and the people are dispersed and they will come down south, and there was no rice at home, and mother will go next door and borrow and cook and feed these people. So those were some of the values that I saw which were imbibed in me, and mother was my part and parcel of my life. Finished my undergraduate. It didn't cost anything. I got scholarship. I never bought any books. Borrowed somebody's books, and my sister, who was at home, copied it so that I could use it. Had a brother-in-law who worked in the railway. They used to sell food in the railway stations. So those papers are like the brown paper we use in the toilet to wash hands. So he always brought a pillow of those paper when he came home. And my sister used to sew books. And in college, they used to make fun of me because my books were not like anybody else's. My notebooks were different. But yet everybody wanted to borrow those notebooks because it had some stuff in it. But I didn't see any of those. Went to a convent, and I always used to get picked because my uniform was not to the par, because I would have blue with red or white with something else. But I used to get by somehow or the other because I did my work. So I finished my undergraduate and wanted to go for graduate studies. And again, my mother said, we will somehow manage, go on. I got the Government of India scholarship. The fees was only 10 rupees those days. And I got 1,000 rupees as my scholarship together. I had never seen money like that, but the first one was spent for my sister's wedding, the sister who was very close to me. Two years passed, and after that, I had a job as soon as I finished. I got a job, but in the meanwhile, there was an opportunity to come to Canada to study. That is the short journey. Now, coming to Vedanta, Swami Vashyananda came to my life in 1976 when he arrived. And Swamiji had the two devotees that came with Swami said, Swamiji had these diets, Swami wake up at this time, aarti at 4 o'clock, and, you know, things were laid out, and, you know, 4 o'clock, yeah, I got up. got up at 4 o'clock, but when the aarti was sung, I had no clue what was going on. And then especially when it came to Khandana Bhavabandhana, it was long and I didn't understand a word. But I saw this gigantic person in Swami Vashyananda. And yet so loving he was. He sang very piously, on time, read the Gita in the morning, and he imbibed in me a very different part of my life. Swamiji, from then on, became a father figure in our family. And several changes followed after that. Swami Vashyananda sent several Swamis following, one of whom was Swami Nisreyasananda from South Africa. Swami Nisreyasananda happened to be from Kerala, about where I am from, about 20 miles from my hometown, spoke my language. And he, well, Swami was living at our home. He spent several weeks, sometimes months with us on several occasions. Swami ate only milk and bread made into a milkshake. That was his breakfast, lunch and dinner. Very learned. And whatever he spoke, it was above my head. And, you know, I didn't bother. I said, it was above me. And my older son at that time was 2 years old. Early in the morning, you know, I will get up. I had to take care of whatever at home, take the child to school, go to school and come back. And then evening there are lectures, either at home or outside. So when all that is taken care of, sometimes when there are functions at home, I had to cook for the visitors. I will have refreshments or something. So we had daily or program, something or the other going on. And about 9 o'clock, everybody is gone. Child goes to sleep. And then often I would be left with these dishes all over, and you know, I don't know what to do, you know. This continued for several years. Since then we had weekly services, Sunday services at home, and almost about every month or so there will be Swamis that will come through. And when Swamis came, we had programs. So I often had, what do I do with all these dishes and all this work? And I got to get up in the morning and go to work. I had to think and switch gear. So one time, when Swami Nisreyasananda was here, I noticed that he would never go to sleep until all my work is done. He would sit in the living room. He didn't speak. He will be sitting in the living room. And, you know, I will to finish my dishes and everything. And after that is done, it will be about 2 o'clock or something like that. Swami will go to sleep. I will go to sleep. And around 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock. Swami only needed about 2 hours sleep or so, you know, so it didn't matter. We'll get up in the morning and life goes on. And I wasn't very positive in myself because I was tired. I was tired all the time, so cough. I would cough, I used to spit up. So, sometimes, you know, there was intellectual discussions going on between my husband and Swami. There will be readings going on on Sundays. I was the Sunday school teacher. And there will be discussions. I never heard any Swami's talks. I never thought of those anyway, you know, but I never heard anything. So I just said, oh, well, you know, it's not for me. You know, I had other things to do. But at one time, Swami Nisrayasananda made me understand that this is what is written in your life. You do work as worship. Your work is your worship, and therefore you must do that as a worship. It didn't register at that time, but as life went on, it became clear to me as to that's what I was supposed to do. Times went on, it was 1979, and Vedanta had taken several roles, and I was fortunate to have been under the company of so many Swamis, among whom Swami Swananda, Swami Sraddhananda, whom I very dearly remember. Swami Sraddhananda came in 1979 summer. He was the Sacramento head of the head. He was very fond of the zoo. And Swami Sraddhananda, yeah, I'll be very short. And it was around that time I was going through a hard time in my life. Swamiji is looking at the time. Swami Sraddhananda, it was at that time I was going through a hard time in my life because I could see the road I was traveling was coming to a fork. And I had to decide which way I was going. 79, I made a trip to India, took my son Ashok, and I hoped I was going to visit Belur Math. I had a letter and all, but that wasn't time for me. Still has not been time for me. I have not been there. But I visited South India Center as well as in Rajkot, Madras, Bangalore and Bombay. After I came back, I had a very hard time in my life I was going through. I was very unhappy in my life. I wanted to have another child. And life at home was not very happy. So it was at that time I read Holy Mother's book. And I read her book. I came back from home and 1 week I stayed. I didn't see anybody. I read that book. And I spent a lot of time downstairs where the shrine was. And I prayed. I prayed very much to Mother. And Mother's life really touched me. Where she was at such a high level of spirituality, being the wife, mother, attendant of Sri Ramakrishna, whom he adored as his Sahadharmani. And her life just really touched my life. And at that time, I prayed, and I do remember a sort of my wish being fulfilled, where my second child was born. I wouldn't want to go into detail, but I had a very, very divine experience. He changed my life. He was named Anand, and he changed my life. And I happened to see and feel different things in my life. My children showed me different path, different. Opened my eyes in so many different ways. So I just sort of looked at and tried to feel and see Holy Mother in so many ways in my life. From there, Mother sort of became a part of me. It is during that time Swami Ranganathananda visited that land. And I remember very clearly Swami Ranganathananda being in such a state and such a great person, how he was handling the little child, 2 months old, my son. And he was walking around carrying the child. And at that time he was reciting the Shiva Manasa Puja. And I remember, so don't you know that, you know, and I had an aunt visiting me, so I remember writing that in Malayalam and learned it by heart. And it was around that time Swami Sraddhananda visited and he wrote me a Shiva Puja. Few little things around that time happened. And Holy Mother, day by day, became an integral part of my life. How she tended to her devotees, how she tended to the problems at home as she was dealing with Radhu, how she tended to the devotees that came far off, different kind of people whom he hadn't seen, like Sister Nivedita. And Mother, a sort of, became an integral part of my life. One thing I remember that she left with me is the last lesson that she left with the devotees, where she said, if you want peace of mind, do not find fault in others. Try to find that within yourself. No one is your enemy. Mother was a mother for, she said, I am a mother for the wicked and the virtuous. She was a mother for the monastic monks as well as for the devotees. I know I can go into intellectual part of Mother's life. That part is going to be told by Dr. Padiye. I know Mother is Mother. Thank you.
I think I should say that it's just exactly for lives like that. That Mother came. It's lives full of work, turmoil, discovery, satisfactions which come very late. Just lives like that, that need and find solace from Holy Mother. And I want to thank Swaminathan for this very personal account and revelation of what Mother means in her life. If she had tried to talk more about Mother, nothing would have come but tears. So there is another opportunity to hear a little more, and we hope you won't have so many tears. Dr. Padhi is Dr. Arvind Padhi is a former president of the Vedanta Center of Atlanta in the 70s and 80s, and Dr. Padhi is a PhD, retired from the CDC, where he was research bacteriologist.
Microbiologist. You would pardon me, but since I worked at CDC, the person with whom and under whose guidance I used to work, at the very early beginning, when I started working at CDC, he told me, it is better, if you are going to open your mouth, you better write it down first, so that you would be more precise, and there's very few chances that you would say something stupid. And I still believe in that, and that's why I made notes what I wanted to say. This time also Swamiji has again given me a difficult assignment to say a few words about Sri Sharada Devi, because I am the least qualified person to do that. He did it earlier, some years ago, when the center was in Decatur. On Thakur's, Sri Ramakrishna's birthday, he asked me to talk about Sri Ramakrishna, for which again I have no qualification at all. But this is the second time I am doing the same mistake again, so you'd pardon me. It is one of the difficult tasks to appreciate her life of simplicity, of solitude, and inward silence in these present times. In this age, especially in the Western world, people have different views and set opinions about the role of a woman in her family, as a wife, as a mother, and as an active member of the society, with personal aspirations and ambitions to succeed in her chosen professional careers. With the present-day ideas of freedom for both men and women, achievements and success being worshipped in their chosen professional careers and sensual gratifications, and when sensuality is considered a normal behavior now, how can we appreciate and learn from the life of Sri Sharada Devi, a woman whose life was utter simplicity, solitude, silence of the heart and mind that was full of peace and compassion for all life. I was directed to study her life by a very unexpected event. Some 10-15 years ago, we used to celebrate Sri Ramakrishna's, or Thakur as he is referred by many, Thakur's birthday and Holy Mother's birthday at Mr. and Mrs. Lahiri's house, and by performing a puja worship. Both Mr. Pranab Lahiri and Mrs. Jayanti Lahiri, who is no more with us, used to ask me to perform the puja. To this day, I never could understand why they chose me to perform the puja. During 1 year after the puja, Mrs. Lahiri introduced her mother to me, who was present for that occasion. While talking with her mother looked at me and said, "You know, every aspirant who wants the grace of Thakur has to go through the worship and grace of the Holy Mother." That statement was a call of awakening for me. I have been trying to understand the meaning and significance of that statement all these years. My present understanding, which is very little, is as follows. We all have read the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, Sri Ramakrishna, the Great Master, by Swami Sharadananda, and Swami Vivekananda's numerous revelations about Sri Ramakrishna. While reading these epics, we all have been perplexed and enchanted by his austerity, his sadhana, his visions, and his divine life. But all of us in our minds interpret his life by our own little shoddy judgments, conclusions, sometimes with disbelief, questioning, and even little suspicion. And that is what our consciousness is. In short, that is what we are. Without emptying this storage of judgments, conclusions, interpretations, nobody can truly understand Thakur's life and his work. This artist's total cleansing of consciousness, what is called Chitta Shuddhi, can only take place only through the grace of Holy Mother. That is what that statement means to me at present. Another great yogi and teacher of India, Sri Aurobindo, gives us instructions what we need to do for this grace from the Mother. He says, to walk through life armored against all fear, peril, and disaster, only two things are needed. That two that go always together, the grace of the Divine Mother, and on your side, an inner state made up of faith, sincerity, and surrender. Let your faith be pure, candid, and perfect. An egotistic faith in the mental and vital being, tainted by ambition, pride, vanity, mental arrogance, vital self-will, personal demand, desire for petty satisfactions of the lower nature, is a low and smoke-obscured flame that cannot burn upward to heavens. If you desire this transformation, put yourself in the hands of the Mother and her powers without cavil or resistance, and let her do unhindered her work within you. Three things you must have: consciousness, plasticity, and unreserved surrender. Swami Vivekananda stated that Sri Ramakrishna created Holy Mother as an ideal of the Indian womanhood. She was a great spiritual teacher, although she did not lecture, write a book, or appear in public. Ever covered with modesty's garment, she played the role of Sri Ramakrishna's wife, but playing this role, she was always a nun and a disciple first. She was the spiritual successor of Sri Ramakrishna, but she never made any special claim for herself, though the highest honor and respect was conferred on her by one and everyone, and even now we are doing that. She lived in seclusion and silence, looking after the spiritual needs of Thakur's disciples and the physical needs of her blood relations. She was the sole guardian of an eccentric niece, we all know, and her whole life was that of stillness and prayer and a loving devotion to duties. She was an extraordinary mother in that she cared for everyone, although she had no children of her own. The relationship between Sri Ramakrishna and his wife Sri Sharada Devi is a subject of serious contemplation for every aspirant. They had a unique spiritual companionship. He showed great love for her, but of an entirely different kind. He gave her spiritual instruction and also showed her how to perform practical day-to-day necessities, like how to trim a lamp in the worship room, how to travel in a train, and especially how to adjust herself to different changing circumstances. A unique relationship developed between them as they lived together in the same room at Dakshineshwar. He always remained true to his monastic vows, but there was no lack of love between them. Once, as Holy Mother was massaging Sri Ramakrishna's feet, she asked him what he thought of her. And he replied, "The mother who is the deity in the temple, the mother who gave birth to me, now resides in the Nahabat, and even she is now massaging my feet. I look upon you in that light as the embodiment of motherhood." She was his peer in every respect. She was the embodiment of purity. In this age, when a woman is looked at as an object of sensuality, this spiritual union between Sri Ramakrishna and Sri Sharada Devi is difficult to understand. The culmination of this relationship came when she was literally worshipped by Sri Ramakrishna as the embodiment of the Divine Mother. In that act, he demonstrated a complete control over his lower nature and a completely new attitude towards womanhood. Personally to me, both of them have demonstrated the spiritual union and relationship in their previous incarnations. During her pilgrimage through Vrindavan, she prayed that she may not see anybody's faults. Her prayer was answered, Once she was criticized for looking the other way at the fault of a maidservant. And Holy Mother commented, "Well, there is no dearth of people who constantly see faults in others. The world will not come to a standstill if I act otherwise. I am differently constituted." After passing away of Sri Ramakrishna in 1886, she became a teacher, and her spiritual family covered the entire world. She was a mother to them all. She prayed and meditated at night for their welfare. She continued her work saying that Sri Ramakrishna has left her behind to manifest the motherhood of God. Before she left this world in 1919, her last words were, "If you want peace of mind, do not find fault with others, but find fault with rather with yourself. Learn to make the world your own. Nobody is a stranger. The world is yours." Who was this great soul of purity that lived amongst us? Only once in her life, she revealed who she was to a brahmachari named Krishnalal. During her visit to Rameshwaram, after she had finished her worship of Rameshwara Lingam, looking on at that uncovered Shivalingam made up of sand, the mother to herself soliloquized, "It is just as I had left it. It is just as I had left it." The same divinity which incarnated in Treta Yuga as ever faithful consort of Sri Ramachandra and worshipped the Shivalingam made up of sand on the sea coast of Rameshwaram descended again as all enduring and ever gracious Holy Mother. So, one who is a student of Ramayana and has studied the life of Holy Mother can study the true lives, the consort of Sri Ramachandra, Sita, and the Holy Mother, and you will see almost the same purity of life in both of them, because both are incarnations of the one Divine Mother. I'd like to just conclude this life, which is one of the stotras written for Holy Mother, describes what she was. It says, "Pavitram charitam yasyah, pavitram jivanam tatha, pavitrata swaruminyai tasmai kurmo namo namah." To her whose character is pure, whose life manifests total purity, the embodiment of purity itself, I offer my repeated salutations. Thank you.
And thank you, Dr. Parche, fully living up to my expectations. I now invite you to ask of these two contributors any questions that you'd like to put to them on from what you've heard, or any comments that you might like to have on what was said, or beyond that. I think I should tell you, though that on Tuesday night, those of you who were not able to be here on Tuesday night, we had some new quotations from Mother's store of wisdom. And at one point, her crazy sister-in-law threatened her with, she said, "May you go to destruction, Sarvanash, may you be a Sarvanashi, may you go to destruction." And Mother replied, "Don't you ever say that again. I cannot go to destruction. I have children all over the world." Now, how did she know that she had children all over the world? She had never traveled much outside of India, not for sure. And yet she said, I have children all over the world. You cannot ask for my destruction. Of course, meaning that she's indestructible, for one thing. She's the infinite and indestructible being. And then secondly, that she must not be destroyed, being mother of all these children. So please, any questions, comments that you'd like to make? We have some time. Yeah.
I want to ask about the story about the fetal phantom. I didn't quite understand that she revealed herself, but I didn't quite grasp the significance. Could you explain that a little more? Vaguely familiar. I've read the Ramayana and Reader's Digest condensed version. But I'd like a little bit more information about that, please.
Before crossing the sea there, with a huge army of monkeys, which was accompanying Sri Rama, he worshipped Lord Shiva, his, what you call the Ishtadeva, the one he worshipped in his life. And in doing that, being on the coast, the Shiva Lingam was formed by himself, and it was made out of sand. That's what the Rameshwara Lingam is, even now, that stands there. Of course, for worship, it is covered with a golden on the top of the original Lingam. When Holy Mother, with many, also the Swamiji at that time from Madras Center, went with her, and at that time, the Maharaja or the owner of the temple had given special instruction to give a complete freedom for her to allow her to worship in the temple the way she wants to. Because he was the disciple of Swami Vivekananda, and he said, she is the guru of my guru, so she should be given a total freedom. So she went there and she worshipped the lingam, performed the puja. And while doing that, the cover which covers the lingam was taken out for her. And since it's made up of sand, and it's from her deep inner conscience, those words came out, that this lingam is exactly the way as I left it. Because when she returned, after Rama killed the Ramana, and she was freed, and when they came back, one of the Ramayana interpretation, it says she worshipped the lingam there.
Sita.
And that's what
came up in her mind.
Came out of her, because what happened, only she knows how she knew. That showed the relation, who she, this lady in human form, which came in the 1815s and lived through 1920s, who she was. Because even in Sri Ramakrishna's, if you study the life, it comes out who he was, who is the incarnation of whom, even though he himself rarely said about it, but it has been revealed several times who he was. And this lady, who was really a lady of silence and solitude, only once she revealed who she was. So, it's especially when you see somebody like in a human form, it will always throw us away. One time we'll say that it is a person with the divine qualities, and at the other times we'll see them as human beings with all the human limitations. And that is a play which one has to really meditate and understand what is going on. Because such people who come for a certain purpose rarely reveal who they are. They accept all the human limitations, but always during their life work they show how to transcend your human limitations and do something and reach way higher.
Anybody else? I have a question for Smarna. When we, as Westerners, approach a life like Sarada Devi's, which is deeply steeped in the culture of her family and her village, which is in Bengal, after all, we find a lot of things that have to be understood. We find a lot of little peculiarities that are not in our culture, that we have to get across that bridge, we have to go across that bridge and relate to her as we would relate to somebody we know intimately in our own culture. Now, you didn't have that much of a problem because you're already an Indian, but coming from South India, and here's a Bengali woman, and there must have been differences, little differences and shades of conflict that might come in there. What would you say it is about Mother which makes it possible for all kinds of people from all kinds of cultures and lands to accept her?
That is what I understood in the word mother. Like I myself, sometimes I say my mother is no more, but my best friend, mother, who is like my own mother, and when I get to go see her, dine with her, serve her, and as soon as I say my mother is no more, I just turn around and say, you know, what am I saying? Because I can't see any difference the way in which she treats me or her children, because for her, I am like her own daughter, and I feel her as my own mother. And this is what Holy Mother exhibited. She was mother, and mother with capital M, and she was also mother with little M. And she treated everybody alike. So there, I could not see any difference between North or South, or having left India for a long time, I see myself as a part of this part of the world too. I could not see any difference because she treated everybody as mother. And I saw that when Sister Nivedita went. The contact they made with each other
Very true.
Mother and nothing more.
What Swarna says reminds me of what Swami Ashokananda said to us about Sri Ramakrishna. He said, you may get acquainted with the Master as a 50-year-old man of the province of Bengal, born in Kamarpur and living in that climate and environment. But you must never end up with that. You must always understand that he is merely a gateway to a much larger being, and you must think of him as Brahman, as Saguna Brahman, manifesting through a particular form and a particular time. Your allegiance, your love, your devotion, your conviction must be of his divinity, of his utter transcendence, of the peculiarities and particularities of birth and place and time. It's the same story for Sarada Ma. Same story exactly. If we are to see her as the Divine Mother, which I think we are to do, and has been expressed and stressed tonight, then we have to see her in that light and not as being a woman of a particular place and culture. And the accidents and unnecessary details can be left behind. They enter into the spirit of her motherhood. That is what makes her universal. That is what makes her dear to us. Anybody else have any questions?
When did the Holy Mother become mother? You know, in other words, what, you know, when did this transformation sort of occur in this individual who then, you know, became to be regarded as a universal mother?
That's a very good question, because the same Swami said to us that that's just his opinion. He said, Sri Ramakrishna and other avatars who are born avatars, Sharada Maha became an avatar. From being born an ordinary woman, she turned into an avatar of motherhood.
Right.
So that's a very good question. Can anybody supply? I have an answer, but I want to hear what anybody else has to say.
But he did pick her. He did single her out. I mean,
but that didn't make her a motherhood.
But I mean, he must have seen something. He knew of her, and he picked her out when they were trying to pick a wife for him. He said, "This is who I want."
Right.
So he knew something about her was extraordinary, or at least the potential was there.
That's true.
Well, did he know that, or did she?
He knew. As he knew all his disciples who they were before they came to him, he knew her too.
He was a very young girl when they met.
5 years old.
But if you asked, what was the moment when she? Became sort of ushered into the role of the mother, divine mother, motherhood.
Maybe
I would like to suggest that it was good.
Maybe when Ramakrishna had worshipped her as a divine mother.
Chaudhasi Puja. I think so. I was going to say that, yeah. Lena says
it. Formal,
and
formal.
Uma says it was Chaudhasi Puja. I think that is a point. I have always wondered, I've been wanting to ask Swamis, different Swamis that come around, the older ones, she was initiated by a family guru there in Jairambati, in her village. She had the usual Bengali initiation from a kula guru, somebody who's a professional to go around and give mantras, you see, a priest. And I have always wondered, at what point did she stop using that mantra and take the mantra of the master? I have never been able to find out from anyone where that point was. I suspect that she never did use Sri Ramakrishna's name as a mantra, because she looked upon him as Kali. And when he died, she said, "Mother, where have you gone?" You see? So she looked on him as Kali, and he looked on her as Kali. So they called each other mother. And I suspect that once she got to Dakshineshwar, she took up the mantra. He must have given her a Kali mantra, and she used that. I suspect that. I don't know. I can't put it.
Okay, I was thinking only a conjectural answer. I'm probably true. But this kind of metamorphosis is not acute all of a sudden. It's slow, persistent, undenying evolution, and finally one drop is too many and she overflows. But it's like, you know, Gorky's mother knowledge. You know, she's a very ordinary woman, but from a mother, all of a sudden she becomes the mother, a leader in Russia.
Right.
So,
and another thing is that gives us so much hope for ourselves. I mean, Sri Ramakrishna, okay, he was born perfect, he was born without karma, he was born an avatar, he started from perfection, no place to go. All it was show, all that sadhana was just for our benefit. But Swamiji and Mother and Swamiji give us the example of how human beings, we as ordinary human beings,
still can reach the heights of spiritual knowledge and character, perfection of character. This gives a great hope to us and lots of promise to us that we don't have to start where Sri Ramakrishna started. We can start where Narayana started and where Sharada started and become illumined and perfect souls. Well,
One little comment.
Yeah.
For this. After I read her life, and when I saw this, her exclamation, and that who she was in the Treta Yuga, mm-hmm. I went back and studied Ramayana,
yeah.
just to look at her in that form of Sita.
Mm-hmm.
And throughout Ramayana, this lady has done the same thing again.
Mm-hmm.
Her life, she has stayed in the background, yeah. even though the whole Ramayana happened because of her.
Right.
She became the instrument, because she was taken away by Ravana and the whole thing happened. She very rarely manifested her divinity.
Yeah.
And it's almost the same in...
And so many centuries in between.
Yeah. And it's so... The life is so full of solitude and quietness in the Holy Mother's life.
Yeah.
That is what attracts me towards her. That knowing what is happening at the human level, which she never left, and also knowing the reasoning, the maybe higher level, what it was revealed to her, she kept that simplicity of life, never ever brought in any other things. She suffered like anybody else. She went through and experienced all the sorrows of life. And in that suffering and transcending, she lies her real divinity to me.
No, yes and no, I would say yes and no, because she was quite a child prodigy. As Sita, she was quite a child prodigy. Shiv Dhanush, which nobody could lift up, she just prayed like that. And secondly, she has shown her human form over and over again. She has cried, she has blamed, she has been angry, she has cursed, everything she has done. So that way, there is some character contrast and some character compassion.
But regarding the purity,
that's
the purity of character was extremely similar.
Well, it's our usual class conclusion time, so I guess we should be following that. I wanted to say that though, before we say our prayer, before we say our prayer that we do at the end of Thursday nights, Dr. and Mrs. Patier are old friends, and they have become practically recluses in their house. I visited them the other day, and it seemed like a cave where they are hiding out away from society and all its ramifications. So I would ask them, please stay a little while and mix with our friends, meet some new ones, welcome the old ones so that we can get reacquainted with you. I think that's very important for tonight. You might have to share, I don't know if we have enough for everybody. Oh yes, he is quoting them. Keep it over
there.
Okay. O Lord,
lead us from the unreal to the real, lead us from darkness to light, and lead us from death to immortality. May all be free from dangers, may all realize what is good. May all be actuated by noble thoughts. May all rejoice everywhere. May all be happy. May all be free from disease. May all realize what is good. May none be subject to misery. May the wicked become virtuous. May the virtuous attain tranquility. May the tranquil be free from bonds. May the free make others free. May good betide all people. May the sovereign righteously rule the earth. May all beings ever attain what is good. May the world be prosperous and happy. May the clouds pour rain in time. May the earth be blessed with crops. May all countries be freed from calamity. May holy men live without fear. May the Lord, the destroyer of sins, the presiding deity of all sacred works, be satisfied. For he being pleased, the whole universe becomes pleased. He being satisfied, the whole universe feels satisfied.